My eyes grew accustomed to the gloom, and I saw a small crucifix nailed to the side of the window. I kissed the feet of the hanging Jesus. The confessional smelled of old wood. I thought of the million sins that had been revealed in this small, dark space. Then, abruptly, my thoughts were scattered. The small wooden door of the window slid open in front of me, and in the dark, I could make out the head of Father Burns. His eyes were closed, his head bowed forward. He mumbled something in Latin, then put his hand on his forehead and waited. I made the sign of the cross and said, "Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned." And I made my first confession to him. Diecinueve. Easter Sunday. The air was clear and smelled like the new white linen of the resurrection. Christ was risen. He had walked in hell for 3 days, and on the third day he had risen and was sitting at the right hand of God, the Father Almighty, creator of heaven and earth. The two lines stretched from the steps of the church out to the street. The girls' line was neat. They looked like angels in their starched white dresses, each pair of hands holding a white prayer book and a rosary. The boys' line was uneven, fidgeting nervously. We pulled at our ties and tugged at the tight-fitting jackets. We did not hold our prayer books or rosaries in palmed hands. Around us, proud parents smiled at each other, waiting for the priest to open the doors. From time to time, a mother would move to the line and straighten this or that on a nervous kid. Behind me, horse whinnied into the clear Christian air. Bones snapped at him, and one of the high school sodality girls, whose job it was to keep us in line, whacked him on the head. "Christ will come to judge the living and the dead," I knew.
"What was your penance?" Horse asked Lloyd.
"Ain't supposed to tell," Lloyd sneered.
"Bones got a whole rosary."
Everybody laughed.
"Shh," the high school girl said. "Hey, there's Florence."
Florence was standing against the wall, sunning himself in the morning sun that was just now beginning to warm the cool morning air.
"He's going to hell," Rita whispered next to me. And Agnes agreed.
The horse neighed nervously at the mention of hell. His large teeth chomped hard and a white spittle formed around the edges of his mouth. The air smelled of fresh-cut hay. Up in the bell tower, the pigeons ducked and bobbed at each other and sang their soft, cooing song. Christ was risen. He was in the holy chalice awaiting us.
"I heard Rita's confession," Abel bragged.
"You damn liar," Rita hissed back. "Uh-uh, black spot on your soul," Lloyd said, and shook his finger at her.
"Shh,"
the high school girl warned us. She hit Bones again. She hit him hard because I could hear her knuckles striking the bone of his skull, and her exclamation when it hurt her.
"The door's opening," someone whispered.
Father Burns stood at the entryway, smiling, surveying his flock. The parents returned his smile. They were pleased that he had done so well with us. I turned and looked at my father and mother and Ultima. Then, the lines started moving forward.
"Remember your instructions,"
the high school girl threatened us.
"Don't go drop God on the floor,"
Bones volunteered as he went by, and she whacked him again. We had been told to take the host carefully in our tongue and swallow it immediately. No part of the host must be lost from the time it left the chalice to the time it entered our mouths.
"Don't go bite on God," Horse whispered.
"Swallow him carefully. Don't chew on him." I wondered how God must feel to go into Horse's stinking mouth.
Above us, the choir sang. The two lines moved without incident down the aisle, then filed into the front row of seats. Father Burns went up to the altar. The altar bell rang, and Mass began. All during the Mass I prayed. I thought back to yesterday's confession and about the mixed feelings that the revealing of my thoughts had left in me. But I had told everything. Everything I thought was a sin. I had cleansed myself completely and prepared to take God into my body. Since the confession, I had talked only to Ultima and my mother. I had kept myself pure. On the altar, the priest began the ceremony of changing the bread into flesh and the wine into blood. The body and blood of the risen Christ. Soon he would be with me, in me, and he would answer all the questions I had to ask. The altar bell tinkled, and we knelt. We bowed our heads, and with our right fist softly beat our hearts, saying we believed in the mystery taking place before our eyes. "It's blood now," Abel whispered when the priest raised the chalice with the wine, and his thin voice mixed mysteriously into the ringing altar bell. I peeped and saw the chalice raised high into the cooing of the pigeons, into the mystery of the sky. "Ugh!" Horse spit on the floor. "Blood!" The blood of Lupito, the blood of Narciso, winding its way along the river, crying on the hills of the Llano. "Florence said it's wine, and the priest drinks it because he's a wino," Lloyd said. "Florence said he wouldn't eat God," Bones added. I looked again and saw the flat, round piece of bread the priest held up. That thin wafer was becoming God. It was becoming flesh. "Bread made flesh." "Meat," Bones growled.
"No, Bones, not like that."
I nodded my head. Somehow, I couldn't understand. The mystery was beginning to escape me. I shut my eyes tightly and prayed for forgiveness.
"It's time."
"What?"
"It's time. The priest is waiting."
"Chingada!"
I opened my eyes and stood. My heart was pounding. Was I ready? The line filed towards the altar railing. We knelt clumsily at the railing and tucked our hands beneath the white cloth that stretched over the top. The priest was at the far end of the railing. The girls were getting the communion first. There was still time to pray. "Oh my God, I am sorry for all my sins, because they displease thee, Lord, who art all good and deserving."
"Shh,"
the high school girl said. We waited quietly. Then the priest came to our side. The girls were already filing back to their seats. The altar boy held the gold platter under each chin. The priest mumbled something in Latin and placed the host on the tongue. He moved fast.
"Ugh!"
Out of the corner of my eyes, I saw Bones jump up and push his finger into his mouth. The host had stuck to the roof of his mouth. He was jabbing God with his finger, trying to free him, choking on him. Then, suddenly, the priest was in front of me. I caught a glimpse of the small white wafer, the risen Christ, and when I closed my eyes and felt the host placed on my tongue, I received him gladly and swallowed him. At last, I flooded the sticky piece of bread with hot saliva and swallowed it. God. Now I would know the answers. I bowed my head and waited for him to speak to me.
"Tony. Tony."
"Yes," I cried.
"Go on. Go on."
It was the kid poking me.
"The line's moving."
Bones passed by me, still fingering his mouth. I was holding up the line, confusing them. I moved quickly to get back in step. We filed back into the pew and knelt.
"Lord,"
I whispered, still seeking God's voice.
dumbass, Ernie poked me. You got everybody mixed up. Damn, I nearly choked, Bones whimpered through watery eyes. I closed my eyes and concentrated. I had just swallowed him. He must be in there. For a moment, on the altar railing, I thought I had felt his warmth. But then everything moved so fast. There wasn't time just to sit and discover him, like I could do when I sat on the creek bank and watched the golden carp swim in the sun-filtered waters. God, why did Lupito die? Why do you allow the evil of the Trementinas? Why did you allow Narciso to be murdered when he was doing good? Why do you punish Florence? Why doesn't he believe? Will the golden carp rule? A thousand questions pushed through my mind, but the voice within me did not answer. There was only silence. Perhaps I hadn't prepared right. I opened my eyes. On the altar, the priest was cleaning the chalice and the platters. The mass was ending. The fleeting mystery was already vanishing.
Did you feel anything?
I urgently asked Lloyd and clutched his arm. I feel hungry, Lloyd answered. My own stomach rumbled from the morning fast, and I simply nodded. I glanced around, trying to find in someone's face or eyes the answer that had escaped me. There was nothing, only the restlessness to get home to breakfast. We were standing now. The priest was talking to us. He said something about being Christians now, and how it was our duty to remind our parents to contribute to the collection box every Sunday, so that the new school building could be built, and sisters could come to teach us. I called again to the God that was within me, but there was no answer, only emptiness. I turned and looked at the statue of the Virgin. She was smiling, her outstretched arms offering forgiveness to all.
Ite missa est, the priest said.
Deo gratias,
the choir sang back, and the people stood to leave. It was over.
Veinte.
After Easter, I went to confession every Saturday, and on Sunday morning, I took communion. But I was not satisfied. The God I so eagerly sought was not there, and the understanding I thought to gain was not there. The bad blood of spring filled us with strange yearnings and tumult, and the boys from Los Jaros split off from the boys from town, and there were gang fights. Since I wasn't from across the tracks or from town, I was caught in the middle. It's all part of growing up, Anthony, Miss Violet told me one afternoon after school, when I stayed to help her. Growing up isn't easy sometimes, I said. She smiled. I'll come to see you next year, when school begins, I told her. That would be nice, she said, and touched my head. What will you do this summer? I wanted to tell her that I was searching for something. But sometimes, I didn't even know what it was I sought. I would see the golden carp, but I couldn't tell her about that. Play, I answered. Fish, take care of my animals, and go to El Puerto to learn about farming from my uncles. Do you want to become a farmer? She asked. It was difficult to leave her, but outside I would hear the clamor of the departing kids. I had to get home. I don't know, I said. It's part of the thing I must learn about myself. There are so many dreams to be fulfilled, but Ultima says a man's destiny must unfold itself, like a flower, with only the sun and the earth and the water making it blossom, and no one else meddling in it. She must be a wise woman, Miss Violet said. I looked at her and saw that she was tired, and somehow she seemed older. Perhaps we were all older. Yes, I said. Goodbye. Goodbye, she smiled and waved after me. I ran very hard, so that by the time I was at the bridge I was exhausted. My lungs were bursting with clean air, and my heart was pounding. Still, I had the nerve to call out a challenge to the kid.
Race!
I shouted. He was walking with Ida. I had never seen the vitamin kid walking before, but there he was, just starting across the bridge, side by side with Ida. I raced by him and called the challenge again. I put all I had into that race. I ran as hard as I could, but the kid never passed me. I reached the end of the bridge and turned to look back. Through watery eyes, I saw the kid and Ida still walking side by side across the bridge. Andrew said that someday I would beat the kid across. I remembered. But there was no sweetness to the victory. Instead, I felt that something good had ended. In a way, I felt relieved school was over. I had more time to spend with Ultima, and in her company I found a great deal of solace and peace. This was more than I had been able to find at church or with the kids at school. The Llano had come alive with spring, and it was comforting to walk in the hills and see the new birth take root and come alive green. But even in the new season and in the hills, there were ominous signs. We found tracks near the junipers that surrounded the house. I asked Ultima about them, and she laughed and said it was someone out hunting rabbits. But I saw how she studied the footprints carefully, and then took a dry juniper branch and erased the prints in the sand. And at night I heard the owl cry in warning, not the soft rhythmic song we were used to, but cries of alarm.
It is Tenorio, I said.
Bah, do not bother your mind about that wolf, she laughed.
But I had heard the grown-up's rumor that Tenorio's second daughter was dying and that she would not last the summer, and I remembered his threat. And then there were the rumors about the evil things happening on the Agua Negra ranch. A curse had been placed on one of the families of the Agua Negra, and because the man knew my father and about Ultima's powers, he came seeking help.
¿Cómo estás, Tellez?
My father greeted the thin, weather-beaten man with an abrazo.
Hey, Gabriel Mares.
The gray, emaciated face smiled weakly.
It does my heart good to see an old compadre, an old vaquero.
They came arm in arm into the house where the man called Tellez greeted my mother and Ultima. The formalities did not last long. We all knew the man had come to seek Ultima's help. My father would gladly give his help to any one of his old compadres. It only remained to be seen if my mother would allow Ultima to go help. My mother had been very afraid for Ultima since the night Tenorio and his mob came, and she had not allowed Ultima to help anyone since.
People are ungrateful, she said. They seek her help, and after La Grande has risked her life to help them, then they brand her a witch. Nonsense. We have no use for that kind of people.
But now we listened intently, while the man told of the horror that had enveloped his life.
I swear before God Almighty.
Deus's voice cracked with the tremble of fear in it.
That there are things that have happened to my family that are directed by the devil himself.
Ave Maria Purissima!
My mother exclaimed and crossed her forehead.
The pots and pans, the dishes, lift into the air and crash against the walls. We cannot eat. The skillet full of hot grease badly burned one of my children. Just yesterday morning, I reached for the coffee pot, and it jumped up and spilled the scalding coffee on me.
He rolled up his sleeve and showed us the blistered pink flesh of the burn on his forearm.
Deus, my father said calmly. The imagination.
The imagination,
Deus laughed sardonically.
This is not imagined.
He pointed again to the arm.
It was not an accident, he insisted, and I hadn't been drinking.
Perhaps it is a bad joke, someone who has a grudge against you. My father, the skeptic, questioned.
Gabriel, the people of the Agua Negra are good people. You know that. Who would carry out a joke this far? And who could make stones rain from the skies?
Stones from the skies? My mother gasped.
See, day and night without reason the stones fall and pelt the house.
Why? And how is this done?
I am at my wit's end. It is the devil's work.
Deus moaned.
Courage,
my father said, and reached across and placed his hand on Deus's shoulder.
There was a curse like that at El Puerto when I was a little girl, my mother nodded.
The dishes would move, the statues of the saints themselves were found in the pig pens and the outhouse, and stones would fall like rain on the house.
See. See. Deus nodded in agreement. He knew if my mother believed, then he could get Ultima's help.
The curse was lifted when the priest blessed the house with holy water.
She did not finish.
Ay, mujer, Deus groaned. Do you think my good wife did not think of that? The priest from Vaughn came and blessed the entire house. It did not help. Now, he will not come anymore. He says no evil can withstand the blessing by holy water, and so we must be making up stories. Stories!
He nodded his head and laughed bitterly.
Such stories! We cannot eat, we cannot sleep. My children are like walking zombies. The evil presence moves them like ghosts, and the priest says we make up stories.
It is too much.
He cupped his head in his hands and cried. So again the power of the priest has failed, I thought. Why can't the power of God work against the evils that beset the family of Deus? Why is it allowed to continue?
What can I do? My father asked, trying to console the poor man.
Come with me. And see with your very eyes the things I speak about. Someone must believe,
Deus exclaimed, taking some faith in my father's offer.
I will go, my father nodded.
Ay, gracias a Dios.
Deus stood and embraced my father. They left immediately, and my father did not return until late that night. The lights of the truck came bouncing up the goat path, and I ran to meet him. But he did not greet me when he stepped down from the truck. In fact, he didn't seem to see me. He walked mechanically into the house, his eyes wide and staring straight ahead. He looked very tired.
Gabriel,
my mother said. But he did not answer. He sat in his chair and looked ahead, as if peering into a dream. And it wasn't until he took a long drink of the hot coffee Ultima put in his hand that he spoke.
At first, I didn't believe Deus, he whispered. I'm not a believer in spirits, good or bad, but...
And he turned and looked at us, as if he were coming back to reality, his eyes bright and watery.
But I saw the things Deus spoke about.
I still cannot believe it.
His chin sank to his chest.
Ave Maria Purissima,
my mother cried. Then she turned and went to the sala to pray.
Meantime, we waited in the kitchen.
What is it that is happening out there at that ranch?
My father asked. He did not look at Ultima, but it was obvious he was seeking some understanding from her.
A curse has been laid, she said simply.
Like on my Uncle Lucas? I asked. I was already wondering if she would take me to help this time.
No, she said, addressing my father. This curse was not laid on a person. The curse was put on a bulto, a ghost. It is the bulto that haunts the house.
I don't understand, my father said. He looked up at her searchingly.
A long time ago, she began, the Llano of the Agua Negra was the land of the Comanche Indians. Then the Comancheros came, then the Mexican with his flocks. Many years ago, three Comanche Indians raided the flocks of one man, and this man was the grandfather of Tellez. Tellez gathered the other Mexicans around him, and they hanged the three Indians. They left the bodies strung on a tree. They did not bury them according to their custom. Consequently, the three souls were left to wander on that ranch. The brujas who laid the curse knew this, so instead of placing the curse on a member of the family and taking the chance of getting caught, they simply awakened the ghosts of the three Indians and forced them to do the wrong. The three tortured spirits are not to blame. They are manipulated by brujas.
It is unbelievable, my father said.
Yes, Ultima agreed.
Can they be stopped? My father asked.
Of course, Ultima smiled. All evil can be stopped.
At that moment, my mother returned from praying to the Virgin.
Deus is your friend, she said to my father.
Of course, my father answered. We grew up on the Llano together. We all count each other as brothers.
And he needs help, she said, tracing the very simple steps for us to hear.
There is no one more deserving of help at this moment, my father said.
Well then, we must help in any way we can, she said with finality.
She started to turn to Ultima, but my father motioned her to be still. He got up and went to Ultima.
Will you help this poor family? Will you help my friends? He asked.
You know the rules that guide the interference with any man's destiny, Ultima said.
I know, my father said.
I have tried to lead my own life, and I have given other men room and respect to live theirs. But I feel I must do this for my friends. So let the bad consequences in your chain of destiny fall on my head.
We will leave tomorrow, at sunup, Ultima said.
I was allowed to go, and so early next morning we got in my father's truck and headed westward. We traveled halfway to Las Pasturas and then left the paved road and turned southward on a dirt road of the Llano. The Llano was beautiful in the early morning, beautiful before the summer sun of August burned it dry. The mesquite bushes were green, and even the dagger yucca was stately as it pushed up the green stem that blossomed with white bell flowers. Jackrabbits bolted from shady thickets at the approach of the truck and bounded away into the rolling hills spotted with dark juniper trees. The sun grew very white and warm in the clear azure sky. It was hard to believe that in this wide beauty there roamed three souls trapped to do evil. We had left home in the gray of dawn, and we had all been quiet. But now the lovely expanse of the llano filled our hearts, and we forgot for a while the strange, foreboding job ahead of us.
Ah, there is no freedom like the freedom of the llano, my father said, and breathed in the fresh, clean air.
And there is no beauty like this earth, Ultima said.
They looked at each other and smiled, and I realized that from these two people I had learned to love the magical beauty of the wide free earth. From my mother I had learned that man is of the earth, that his clay feet are part of the ground that nourishes him, and that it is this inextricable mixture that gives man his measure of safety and security. Because man plants in the earth, he believes in the miracle of birth, and he provides a home for his family, and he builds a church to preserve his faith and the soul that is bound to his flesh, his clay. But from my father and Ultima, I had learned that the greater immortality is in the freedom of man, and that freedom is best nourished by the noble expanse of land and air and pure white sky. I dreaded to think of a time when I could not walk upon the llano and feel like the eagle that floats on its skies, free, immortal, limitless.
There is power here, a power that can fill a man with satisfaction, my father said.
And there is faith here, Ultima added, a faith in the reason for nature being, evolving, growing.
And there is also the dark mystical past, I thought, the past of the people who lived here and left their traces in the magic that crops out today. Enveloped in our thoughts, we bounced down the sandy road that at times was no more than a cow path. I was lost in the immensity of land and sky, but my father knew where to go. At the foot of a hill ahead of us crouched the troubled home of Tellez. It was a simple adobe ranch house, squatting low to the good earth, its rusted tin roof shielding it from the hot sun. To the side of the house were the corrals.
That is his place, my father announced.
He drove the truck near the corral and stopped. Tellez came running.
Gracias a Dios que venistes, he cried.
He believed in Ultima's power, and he knew it was his last source of help. He took Ultima's hand and kissed it, then led us excitedly into the house. A frail, thin woman and the children cringed against the wall when we entered.
It is all right. It is all right, Thea said soothingly. La Grande has come to help us.
Only then did the woman whose eyes were burning with fever come forth and greet Ultima.
Grande, she said simply, and kissed her hand.
Dorotea Tellez, Ultima greeted the woman.
These are bad times, Tellez's wife whimpered. I am sorry, but I can offer you nothing to eat or drink.
Her voice broke, and she went to the table, sat, bowed her head on the rough wooden planks, and cried.
It has been like this.
Tellez threw up his arms in exasperation.
Since the evil thing came.
As he spoke, a strange thing happened. A cloud passed overhead and darkened the house. Tellez looked up and cried,
It's here! It's here!
Benditos sean los dulces nombres, his wife moaned.
She crossed herself and fell to her knees. A few moments ago, the sky had been clear, and now, in the gloom, we saw each other as dark bultos. My father started for the door, but Tellez leaped in his way and shouted,
No! Do not go!
The evil is out there.
Then, the pounding began. The darkness had already terrified me, but now the strange pounding noise on the roof made me seek Ultima's hand. She stood quietly, listening to the devil's bombardment that held us with such terror that we could not move. The fear of the deafening, evil noise held us prisoners. The children cringed around their mother, but they did not cry. They seemed accustomed to the devil's beating on the roof.
Jesus, Maria y José,
my father cried out, and he crossed his forehead.
Ay, Deyes groaned. It is the devil dancing on my roof.
His body twisted to the crescendo of the fearful drumbeat, but almost as quickly as it had begun, the noise stopped, and the dark cloud moved away. My father ran to the door, and we followed. It was incredible, but we stepped out into the perfectly quiet day we had known earlier. The llano was so quiet, I could hear the drone of the grasshoppers and crickets in the grass.
The rocks, my father muttered. They weren't here when we came.
He pointed at the melon-sized stones that lay around the house. That is what had pounded on the roof. But where had they come from? We looked up. There was not a cloud in the sky.
Incredible, my father said, and shook his head.
The cloud darkened only the house, and the stones fell only on the roof.
As he spoke, the two boys who had been inside with their mother came outside. Without a word, they began picking up the rocks and carrying them to the nearby corral where there was already a pile of rocks.
We stacked the devil's work in the corral, Deyes said. This is the third time the rocks have fallen.
But from where? My father cried. And how? Deyes only shrugged.
You have searched around the house? Into the hills?
Deyes nodded.
My God!
My father shivered.
It is the work of the devil, I tell you, Deyes murmured.
Ultima, who had stood quietly by us, answered,
It is the work of man, she said. But let us not waste time while the spirits grow stronger. Gabriel, I want you to erect a platform. Here.
She pointed to the ground and marked four spots.
Make the holes there. Use some of those cedar posts in the corral. Make it this high.
She held her hand above her head.
Place many juniper branches on the platform. Cut many branches, because we may have to burn a long time. Have Antonio cut them. He understands the power in the tree.
Then she turned and herded the family back into the house. After that, we did not see her for a long time. My father found an axe in the tool shed and gave it to me. I went into the hills and began cutting juniper branches. Where possible, I took dead, dry branches, because Ultima had said we would be burning them. But when I had to cut into a live tree, I first talked to the tree and asked it for its medicine, as Ultima had instructed me to do with every living plant. I dragged the branches to where my father worked on the platform. He dug four holes and placed the cedar posts in them.
Notice, he said, it is not square, but long, as if it could hold a coffin.
With wire, he securely tied some rafters across the top of the posts. Then, we put the juniper branch roof on the platform. When we were done, we rested and looked at the altar that we had erected. The day was very long. We hadn't brought food, and so the only thing we had was water from the well, which tasted brackish.
That is why they call these the ranches of the Agua Negra, my father explained. I wondered if the water which flowed beneath this earth connected to the waters beneath our town, the waters of the Golden Carp.
Strange that there are no animals around the ranch, my father said. The animals sense this bad business and stay clear of it, just as we have stayed clear of those evil rocks.
He pointed to the pile of rocks in the corral. What we have seen today is incredible, he finished.
It's good that we have Ultima to explain it, I told him, and he only shrugged. We waited. A strange singing, a low chanting song emanated from the house all day long. Finally, at dusk, when the night jars and bats began to fly and the setting sun had passed from orange to gray, Ultima came through the front door of the house. She carried what appeared to be three bundles, and she stepped to the platform quickly.
You have done well, she said, and placed the three bundles at the foot of the platform.
Place the bundles on the platform, and set fire to it, she commanded, and stepped back. My father was surprised when he picked up the first bundle, and found it heavy. Ultima had carried the three lightly, but he had to strain to lift them up on the platform. There was another strange thing about Ultima as she stood with her arms crossed, quietly watching my father work. The way she stood, the bright sash around her waist and the two glossy braids falling over her shoulders, made me feel that she had performed this ceremony in some distant past. My father picked up a dry brush of yerba de víbora, and striking a match to it, he used it as a torch to set fire to the platform. The fire sputtered at first, but as it found the drier branches, it hissed and crackled, then whooshed up in a ball of yellow fire. The fragrance of the dry bush had been sharp and tangy, but as the green branches caught fire, the sweet, spermy smell of the evergreen filled the air.
Continue feeding the fire until I return, Ultima commanded, and she turned and walked back to the house.
We piled branches beneath the platform and kept it burning. Soon, even the cedar posts were burning. Their popping sound and their sweet scent filled the night air. Somehow, the fire seemed to dispel the brooding mystery we had felt since the shower of rocks.
What is it we burn? I asked my father, as we watched the inferno envelop the bundles.
I don't know, my father answered. It is all so strange.
My father once told me a story about the early Comancheros on this llano, and what they learned from the Indians about their burial ceremony. They did not bury their dead the way we do, but they made a platform like this one, and cremated the body. It was part of their way of life. He paused, and I asked,
Are these the...
But before I could finish, he said,
I don't know. But if it will help Deus be rid of these ungodly things, who are we to question old ways?
In the dark night, we heard an owl sing. It was Ultima's owl. It seemed the first sign of life we had heard around the ranch all day, and it lifted our spirits. Somehow, the memory of the falling rocks faded with the owl's cry, and what had been frightening and unexplainable grew distant. I looked for the rock pile in the corral, but I couldn't see it. Perhaps it was because the bright fire made the shadows around us very dark.
Cuidado! My father shouted.
I turned and jumped back as the top of the platform toppled into the ashes beneath. A flower of sparks blossomed into the night air. The four posts, which had held the platform, continued to burn like torches, one for each of the directions of the wind. We threw the rest of the juniper branches in the fire. Already,
The platform and the three bundles were only white ashes.
You two are good workers, Ultima said.
We hadn't heard her, and were startled at her approach. I went to her and took her hand. She smelled sweet with incense.
It is done, she said. Good, my father answered and wiped his hands.
You know, Gabriel, she said to my father, I am getting old. Perhaps this would be the best burial you could provide me.
She peered into the dying fire and smiled. I could see that she was very tired.
It is a good way to return to the earth, my father agreed. I think the confines of a damp casket will bother me too. This way the spirit soars immediately into the wind of the llano, and the ashes blend quickly into the earth.
Deyes came and stood by us. He too peered into the embers of the strange fire.
She says the curse is lifted, he said dumbly.
He too looked very tired.
Then it is, my father answered.
How can I pay you? Deyes asked Ultima.
Instead of my silver, she said, you can bring us a nice lamb the next time you come to Guadalupe.
I will bring a dozen, he smiled weakly.
And stay away from the one-eyed Tenorio, she finished.
Ay, that devil was in this too, my father exclaimed.
I was at El Puerto about a month ago, Deyes said. I went to the saloon for a drink and to play some cards. I tell you, Gabriel, that man has nothing but revenge in his heart for La Grande. He said something insulting, and I answered him. I thought nothing of it. I was only upholding my honor, our honor, the pride of those from Las Pasturas. Well, a week later the bad things started here.
You picked a bad one to tangle with.
My father shook his head thoughtfully as he stared into the dying fire.
Tenorio has already murdered one of our friends.
I know now of his true evil, Deyes muttered.
Well, what's done is done. My father nodded. Now, we must be on our way.
I can never thank you enough, old friend, Deyes said, and embraced my father warmly. Then he embraced and kissed Ultima.
Adios. Adios.
We climbed into the truck and drove away, leaving Deyes standing by the dying embers of the fire. The bouncing lights of the truck cut a jerky path through the night as we traveled out of the dark llano back to Guadalupe. My father rolled a Bull Durham cigarette and smoked. The fatigue of the day and the humming sound of the tires on the highway made me sleep. I do not remember my father carrying me in when we arrived home. In my dreams that night, I did not recall the strange events that happened on the Agua Negra. Instead, I saw my three brothers. They were three dark figures driven to wander by the wild sea blood in their veins. Shrouded in a sea mist, they walked the streets of a foreign city.
Tony,
they called in the night fantasy.
Tony Rilo, where are you?
Here, I answered, here by the river. The brown, swirling waters lapped at my feet, and the monotonous chirping of the grillos as they sang in the trees mixed into a music which I felt in the roots of my soul.
Oh, Tony,
they cried with such a mournful sound that I felt a chill in my heart.
Help us, Tony. Give us, grant us rest from this sea blood.
I have no magic power to help you, I cried back. I carefully marked where the churning waters eddied into a pool. There, the catfish would lurk, greedy for meat. From my disemboweled brothers, I took 3 warm livers and baited my hook.
But you have the power of the church. You are the boy priest, they cried. Or choose from the power of the golden carp, or the magic of your ultima. Grant us rest.
They cried in such pain for release that I took their livers from the hook and cast them into the raging muddy waters of the river of the carp. Then they rested, and I rested.
21. The days grew warmer, and the blue lake opened for swimming, but Siko and I avoided the glistening, naked boys who dared the deep blue power of the lake. Instead, we worked our way around the teeming lake and towards the creek. It was time for the arrival of the golden carp.
He will come today, Siko whispered. The white sun is just right. He pointed up at the dazzling sky. Around us, the earth seemed to groan as it grew green. We had waited many days, but today we were sure he would come. We crawled through the green thicket and sat by the edge of the pond. Around us sang the chorus of insects which had just worked their way out of winter nests and cocoons. While we waited, time flowed through me and filled me with many thoughts. I was still concerned with the silence of God at communion. Every Saturday since Easter I had gone to confession, and every Sunday morning I went to the railing and took communion. I prepared my body and my thoughts for receiving God, but there was no communication from Him. Sometimes, in moments of great anxiety and disappointment, I wondered if God was alive anymore, or if He ever had been. He had not been able to cure my Uncle Lucas or free the Tellez family from their curse, and He had not been able to save Lupito or Narciso. And yet, He had the right to send you to hell or heaven when you died. It doesn't seem right, I said aloud.
What? Siko asked.
God.
Yeah, he agreed.
Then why do you go to church? I asked.
My mother believes, he answered. I go to please her.
I used to think everyone believed in God, I said.
There are many gods, Siko whispered. Gods of beauty and magic, gods of the garden, gods in our own backyards. But we go off to foreign countries to find new ones. We reach to the stars to find new ones.
Why don't we tell others of the golden carp? I asked.
They would kill him, Siko whispered. The god of the church is a jealous god. He cannot live in peace with other gods. He would instruct his priests to kill the golden carp.
What if I become a priest like my mother wants me to?
You have to choose, Tony, Siko said. You have to choose between the god of the church or the beauty that is here and now. He pointed, and I looked into the dark, clear water of the creek. 2 brown carp swam from under the thicket into the open.
He comes. We held our breath and peered into the water beneath the overhanging thicket. The 2 brown carp had seen us, and now they circled and waited for their master. The sun glittered off his golden scales.
It's him!
The golden fish swam by gracefully, cautiously, as if testing the water after a long sleep in his subterranean waters.
His powerful tail moved in slow strokes as he slid through the water towards us. He was beautiful. He was truly a god. The white sun reflected off his bright orange scales, and the glistening glorious light blinded us and filled us with the rapture true beauty brings. Seeing him made questions and worries evaporate, and I remained transfixed, caught and caressed by the essential elements of sky and earth and water. The sun warmed us with its life-giving power, and up in the sky, a white moon smiled on us.
"Damn, he's beautiful," Siko whistled as the golden carp glided by.
"Yes," I agreed, and for a long time, we did not speak. The arrival of the golden carp rendered us silent. We let the sun beat down on us, and like pagans, we listened to the lapping water and the song of life in the grass around us. "Whose priest will I be?" I thought. The idea that there could be other gods besides the god of heaven ran through my mind. Was the golden carp a god of beauty? A god of here and now, like Siko said? He made the world peaceful.
"Siko," I said, "let's tell Florence."
It was not right, I thought, that Florence did not know. Florence needed at least one god, and I was sure he would believe in the golden carp. I could almost hear him say as he peered into the waters, "At last, a god who does not punish, a god who can bring beauty into my life."
"Yes," Siko said after a long pause, "I think Florence is ready. He has been ready for a long time. He doesn't have gods to choose between."
"Does one have to choose?" I asked. "Is it possible to have both?"
"Perhaps," he answered. "The golden carp accepts all magic that is good. But your god, Tony, is a jealous god. He does not accept competition." Siko laughed cynically. I had to laugh with him, because I was excited and happy that we were going to let Florence in on our secret. Perhaps later, Hassan would know, and then maybe others. It seemed like the beginning of adoration of something simple and pure. We made our way up the creek until we were just below the blue lake. On this side of the lake, there was a concrete wall with a spillway. As the lake filled, it emptied in a slow trickle into El Rito. No one was allowed to swim along the wall, because the water was very deep and full of thick weeds, and because the lifeguard was on the other side. But as we came up the gentle slope, we heard the shouts of swimmers. I recognized Horse and the others shouting and waving at us.
"They're not supposed to be here," Siko said.
"Something's wrong," I answered. I heard the pitch of fear in their voices as they called and gestured frantically.
"Remember, we tell only Florence," Siko cautioned.
"I know," I replied.
"Hurry! Hurry!" Abel cried.
"It's a joke," Siko said as we neared the gang.
"No, something's happened."
We sprinted the last few yards and came to the edge of the culvert.
"What?"
I asked.
"Florence is down there," Bones cried. "Florence hasn't come up. He hasn't come up,"
Abel sobbed and tugged at my arm.
"How long?"
I shouted, and worked myself loose from Abel. It wasn't a joke. Something was wrong.
"A long time," Horse nodded through the spittle in his mouth. "He dived,"
he pointed into the deep water,
"and he didn't come up. Too long."
"Florence," I groaned. We had come seeking Florence to share our secret with him, a secret of the dark, deep blue water in which he swam.
He drowned. He drowned, Bones whimpered.
How long? I wanted to know. How long has he been in the water?
But their fright would not let them answer. I felt Sequo's hand on my shoulder.
Florence is a good swimmer, Sequo said. But he's been down too long, Abel whimpered.
What do we do? Horse asked nervously. He was frightened.
I grabbed Abel.
Go get the lifeguard.
I pointed across the lake where the high school boys loitered on the pier and dove off the high board to show off for the girls.
Tell anyone you can find there's been an accident here, I shouted into his fear-frozen face. Tell them there's a drowning.
Abel nodded and scampered up the path that cut around the side of the lake. He was instantly lost in the tall green reeds of the cattails. It was a warm day. I felt the sweat cold on my face and arms.